Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I'm glad you joined us tonight. A close friend who's talked on the show several times, who I made the acquaintance of in 2015 when I was working in Michigan at the Creative Health Institute. And she has an organization that is a 501c3, and she helps a lot of people with this, with lifestyle and health issues. And she's a cancer survivor, and she's talked on the show many times. She sent me an article about how much money is being spent on prolonging the lives of our elderly, of which I am one, by the way. So I watched it. It was a 60 Minutes program. And, of course, we've talked about this many, many times. And Wednesdays, we always talk about health. And I think if you really think about health, when you try to practice good health, it's the outcome that, you know, that we're trying to achieve. It's leaving the world gracefully and literally succumbing to just being old without all the horrific health challenges that you and I and everybody else I know has lost many loved ones to. And a lot of the things we talk about on the show, Shelley and Monica are very educated in regard to good health choices. But again, at the end, if somebody's going to, you know, keep you alive on a machine, why bother? I haven't talked to Shelley today. I don't know whether she'll be on the show tonight, but I do have Monica on my dashboard. So let's see how she feels about this, and let's. I want to explain some of the things I heard. Have you ever watched one of these shows about? I know you watch some of these programs. Have you ever heard about exactly how much money Medicare is spending on keeping? Well, they refer to us as octogenarians, which is a human being which is between the age of 80 and 89, which we're not there yet. I certainly have a lot of friends that are in that arena. I, this past weekend, drove to Tampa and celebrated a friend's 90th birthday, and he looks awesome. I mean, he's still dancing with his wife and, you know, I mean, he's very, very healthy and active. And then I read this thing that Carolyn, remember Carolyn that talks on the show every now and then? I think she's even ordered some products from, She sent me this and she said, Renee, look at this. There's actually, you're sitting down because this is like unbelievable. $50 billion a year. Trying to keep people, some of whom have signed or written a living will, Monica. But they, you know, it's not to keep them on life support, you understand, which is what the living will is about. It's to, you know, put them in a better place, sometimes even with a transplant, sometimes with a surgery. Sometimes, you know, all the different kinds of, you know, hospital procedures that can be done.
Right.
And it's paid by Medicare because we're senior citizens. But $50 billion a year, honey, and we can't afford health care for everybody. It's, you know, like, talk about an oxymoron, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
so
crazy.
So what do we do? I mean, we've talked many times about the living will, but the living will, again, is purely and simply for life support.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes,
well,
these people, according to the... Go ahead, tell me.
Well, I think it's the people, you know, of course, and their families. You know, do whatever you got to do, doctor. Just keep her alive. I can't let my mom die, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's the families. And the doctor is like, every time a family member does that, he's like, dollar sign, dollar sign, dollar sign. You know, so he's going to jump through hoops to go give all these procedures, MRIs, PET scans, you know, whatever.
That's where most of the money, you're exactly right. That's where most of the money gets built up at, right there with the thing, you know, the scans and the all these really, really expensive tests.
Yeah, exactly. And I even had a nurse, a couple of times I've been in a hospital, you know, it was just like an overnight thing. It was a heart thing, you know, but it's like all will and control leaves when you're in that hospital. And I was talking to a nurse one time. She's in the, on the cancer floor at the at a hospital in Pennsylvania. And I said, do you think they pump something in the air that makes, you know, through their, to their HVAC system to make people so pliable and willing to do anything, you know, because when I was there, I was like very lackadaisical, you know, it's stupid.
I get it.
She says,
sure.
Sometimes I think so too, you know, but, you know, they wanted to do all these things. Thank God, you know, that I, all these tests and all this, and I'm like, just give me the paper. I'm out of here. I ain't going through all this BS. But I think that's what happens to, you know, older people. You know, they'll, and the white coat syndrome. Oh, no, honey, you need to stay here and you need to have this test. You know, that's how the doctors talk to people, especially little old ladies.
Yeah. Yeah, so. You're right. You're right. Well, but, okay, so let's say you're absolutely right. Everything you just said, I agree with 1,000,000%. And I do believe that when you're in the – I was talking to my oldest son about this. And he, you know, since we're talking about this, I need to know where all this stuff is. I said, well, I just found out recently that the living will I designed – well, when I had my back surgery, so that was almost 30 years ago now, is no good anymore. So I have to get, I have to do another living will, and I will do that, and have insurance and all that kind of stuff together. And I said, but this goes into not being kept on life support. But now I'm very interested, and I will find out for all of us, exactly what the deal is to stop them from doing unnecessary testing on me or anything like that. I don't want any of that, Monica. I don't. I mean,
that's
after saying goodbye to my brother, my mother, my sister, my husband, everybody, they hated it. And I don't want to do it either.
That's called a DNR, do not resuscitate. And you have to sign that.
Right.
And then, you know, if you are in a hospital and, you know, I guess if you faint or I don't know what it is, but they cannot resuscitate you. It's against the law.
Well, that's life support. That's life support. That's a living will. And that's life support.
No, it's different.
If I, I don't think so. We're going to have to research this.
Okay. All right.
A do not resuscitate means that you can sign a do not resuscitate. You're absolutely right about that, without a living will. But a living will is that has been established ahead of time. Maybe I'm explaining it better that way, because you're right.
Okay.
Because I used to have that for people at Hippocrates. If somebody came in and they were really, really ill, it was my job to talk to them about a DNR, because a lot of those people wanted to stay in good shape, healthy, not in good shape in bed. So our doctor would come to me when somebody was really bad and say, Renee, we need to talk to them about a DNR. So that would be my job, and I would talk to them about it. And sometimes they thank you so much. Yes, I definitely want a DNR. I don't want to be kept alive. I'd say, do you have a living will? No, I don't have a living will. So then we would establish that. And my own mother, when we took her to the hospital the night she was dying, she said, you know, she didn't have the DNR. They'd been treating her for cancer for months. And I had to get a nurse to bring me a DNR, and she left the room, so I signed my mother's signature. And, I mean, you know, that was the end of that. But this is worse stuff. This is like, oh, Renee, you know, you could use a new liver. And you're on Medicare. Uh-huh. Let's give you a new liver. I'm dying of something else. But they want to, you know, those are the kind of things that they're doing to these elderly people, and just
right.
soak in Medicare. And now I'm concerned about that, because I damn sure don't want any of that. I mean, I can't even express strongly enough how much I don't want any of that. So I'm going to make a couple calls this week and get some more information on this. I mean, 60 Minutes is pretty tried and true, and when they talk about something, they have some, you know, some pretty good facts and figures. But they didn't give, I listened to the whole thing, they didn't give any kind of recourse, you know,
mm-hmm.
other than you having responsibility for, you know, your parents or your husband or your wife or something like that, and having paperwork that says you have the right to say yay or nay, which is like a living
right.
will, or any other things that are their words that has been signed, sealed, and delivered kind of thing. But on that note, I'm like trying to figure out how we can do that when I probably know 300 people that can't get any kind of license or get any kind of medical insurance. Just in my life, probably 300. Unless they're
yeah.
senior citizens, and then they've got Medicare. But all the young
right.
people I know, unless they get insurance through their workplace and pay for half of it, they don't have insurance.
Uh-huh.
Do your kids?
Yeah. No, none of them. I don't have insurance.
Yeah. No. That's
no.
what I'm saying. So then, but it's okay. We can't get insurance. They can't make it affordable. But it's okay to spend $50 billion. I can't even count that high. And according to the statistics, 30%, which is, I mean, you know, is I mean, it's not 50%, but 30% of $50 billion, that's a lot of money, are unnecessary
right.
things, and have been deemed
mm-hmm.
unnecessary, and are done anyway because the insurance is available.
Right. And it's all about the money. You know, the hospital gets money.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor gets his cut. Hospital, the radiology department gets their cut.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the money.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm. absolutely,
it becomes
is.
Emotional at that point for the family and, say, the spouse. You know, do whatever you can,
oh,
Doc.
Yeah.
Save my wife. You know, and
mm-hmm.
I don't know for sure, but very few doctors would say, you know, it's kind of hopeless, you know, let her go. You know, they're not going to
mm-hmm.
do that because maybe
mm-hmm.
there's legal liability. Who knows?
Yeah.
But,
well, I think it's against the Hippocratic Oath to
right.
not try.
They
got to,
I mean, right. They
the
got to do everything
yeah.
they think of. As
right.
long as
and
the insurance
no
money is there.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. If there's no insurance, they don't have any qualms about letting you sit there in the corner.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the
exactly.
saddest part. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's really the, not just the saddest, but the most inhuman in my eyes. So,
mm-hmm.
so what do you think we should do? What do you think we should do, Monica? You think we should just make sure all of our paperwork like that is in order? I mean, I have... Well, somebody, I get a call I don't want to bother you, but my sister's here, and neither one of us can lift her suitcase, and there's nobody here. And I said, sure, I'll come over and put her suitcase in, because she was taking her to the airport to fly back to New York. So I drive over. It's not that far away or anything, you know, and I love Jane. She's my friend. And I carry the suitcase out and put it in the car for her sister. And Spike and I go over to Janie's a lot and do little things, like maybe she has a lot of garbage, and she walks with a walker, so she can't get the garbage out of the house. She's got to walk down the driveway, and, you know, she lives in a complex, and put the garbage out. Nobody picks it up at her door or anything like that. So we go over and do things like that for her. Now, but she still drives a car. She still goes out to breakfast with all of us girls every other weekend. She still does all those kind of things. Now, she's not in a place where, because she and I have talked about it, where she's really ready to die, but she'd have a fit if somebody made her go through some horrible surgery or some horrible test or anything like that for nothing. That would be like inhuman to her.
Right.
She would hate that, you know.
She would have,
I don't know
to,
what to tell
also,
them.
Another thing, well, another thing she could do, or people like her, is to have a patient advocate appoint somebody to be their advocate, because, like I said, once you go in the hospital and they put you in that bed, maybe it's the funk in the bed. I don't know what it is, but it's like it surrounds you, and your brain is like mush. You can't think. You don't know what to do.
Well, you
so
feel helpless.
Somebody,
you feel helpless.
Yeah, exactly. So somebody needs to be their advocate, which, you know, could be you for this lady, you know, that type of thing. But it would need to be.
That's a good idea.
Signed, sealed, and delivered. You know, it's got to be some sort of a legal thing,
right?
I would think.
Because
they're not going to let anybody but family into the room. You know, for certain things, I guess, to make decisions.
Well, and you're right.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and until we're just talking about this, I mean, I have all of her information on a sheet of paper that she prepared for me over 2 years ago. Phone numbers, doctor's numbers, her lawyer, all that stuff. I have a key to her house. I have all that kind of stuff. But you're right. We should do something that gives me some kind of, in lieu of a different word, some kind of rights to be able to help her. And maybe we'll talk about that this week. Right now she's doing very well, but she's the one, I've talked about her before. She just turned 82, and she had a stroke in 2015. And now she uses a cane on a good day. On a bad day, she uses a wheelchair or a walker or something along those lines. But I would say all in all, she's doing fairly well. And she has her wits about her and all that kind of stuff, you know. But she's all alone. And like the sister flies in from New York. She has a brother and she has a daughter and a granddaughter, but they both live in Santa Fe. So getting them here is a all-day thing, even by jet, you know. So, and I have a few friends like that. She's not the only one that I have that I do those kind of things for. But it's kind of, when I read this, I thought to myself, it just goes against my grain when I see so many people. Spike, my son, he has more insurance. And he makes wooden things for the kids for their birthdays, and he's made some stuff for me. And he's got a table saw, and he sawed into there was a burr on the other side of the piece of wood that he was working on the table saw, and it made the blade jump
kick
up
back.
And went right into his finger. And you know, almost severed his finger. It didn't. We went to the minor emergency place, which is a new place here, very close to home. And they put shots in it, x-rayed it, and said that they thought he tore a ligament or cut a ligament, and that if it snapped, it would be terrible, and he'd lose use of his finger. So they stitched it up, disinfected it, stitched it up, and sent him via ambulance, which was totally unnecessary. And we said we didn't want it, and he wouldn't let us leave without taking the ambulance to go to St. Mary's Trauma Hospital. So I get there before the ambulance, by the way, which was another kind of amusing anecdote to throw into that. And he gets there, the doctor looks, and he says, I bet they told you there'd be a hand surgeon here on staff. And Spike and I both said, yes, that's why they made us come here, an ambulance. And he said, well, I don't have a hand doctor on staff. That'd be ridiculous for me to have. How do I know when somebody's going to come in with a hand injury? So he looks at it. He says he doesn't think the tendon is severed. He thinks the tendon has been nicked. We go home, gives us a referral for a hand doctor. I call the hand doctor. They want $350 to insure an appointment because he has no
up
insurance.
Up front. Yeah.
Yeah, up front. So Spike says to me, Mom, you just take care of it. I said, what if the tendon is severed? He says, Mom, I wouldn't be able to do this. He moved his finger up and, you know, bent his finger, even with the stitches in it
right.
and everything. I said, I think you're right. So I just, you know, kept it clean, nursed it every day, rebandaged it, all that kind of stuff. When it started really healing and the stitches were healed, I pulled the stitches out and did all that kind of stuff, and his finger's fine. He got a bill for $6,500.
Yeah. Yeah.
$6,500 that's just for the hospital. That doesn't count what they did in the minor emergency place. And then
the ambulance. The ambulance, they'll charge crazy. It'd be cheaper to take a taxi cab.
Yeah, the ambulance was part of that. Well, he didn't need to take it, but they refused to let us leave and go to the other hospital without an ambulance. But again, that's part of the crap. That's part of the scam,
Exactly. They're all in cahoots. They're all in cahoots, and it's all about the money. Yeah.
Very, very sad. Yes. Always about the money. So, like I said, when I read this tonight, well, when I listened to the 60 Minutes thing, and the guy on 60 Minutes was, you know, I mean, they always push the envelope a little bit, you know, on 60 Minutes. And he said, but this is ridiculous. What about, you know, what about the senior citizens that are barely getting by on their Social Security? Somebody that is, I was thinking about this the other day, an entry-level person, Linda and Sherry. Linda and Sherry's Social Security is what, $600 a month?
Around
something
there,
outrageous like that? Yeah.
Right.
Because they always worked as waitresses or barmaids or whatever the case might have been, and so none of the tips were ever added into their Social Security.
Mm-mm.
So how the hell would they live on that if their lives hadn't happened?
Don't know. Uh-uh. Well, anybody.
I mean,
I make more than that.
My Social Security is double that.
Yes, mine too. I make more than that, and I still couldn't afford it. No way. That's why my 70-year-old husband is still working, you know, because can't live on that garbage. I'm very thankful for it, you know, but come on now.
Well, you can't. I mean, it's like, that's why I got this big house, so that I'd always make sure everybody had a roof over their head. They all pay me rent. Everybody pays
rent. Exactly. That's good.
And that's how
we survive.
Otherwise,
you can't.
Yes.
Exactly. You couldn't do it any other way. You know.
No.
And it's the same thing, unless you're rich, of course, unless you got, all kinds of retirement income from, you know, a huge job or something. But, young people, the rents, just to rent a one-bedroom apartment here in Florida, I've never seen such ridiculousness.
I know.
I mean, $900 for a one-bedroom apartment? Are you kidding me? Who could afford that?
Don't.
You know, and nobody could afford this. So they're
minimal is $1,000 a month. Yeah.
See? Yeah, exactly. So that's why I've been reading a lot of what older people are doing is they're opening up their home. If they've got a 3-bedroom home, they don't want to leave their home because it's their family home. Then take in some boarders. Mm-hmm. Why not? And they're there to help each other. I think it's a fantastic idea.
Well, when I first started the show, I talked a lot about this, and I did a study on how many people have gone back to the way it used to be in the old days where several generations lived together in the same home. And I think you'd be surprised, especially out here in the country where the houses are bigger and there's more room.
Right.
I mean, here, there are 12 of us, honey. I have 12 people here. And you know, we're fine. I mean, there's no want for privacy. There's no, I mean, we all have our own rooms. We have everything we need. Now, mealtime, I'm a gatherer, so, you know, tonight everybody came up for chicken and biscuits, and Sunday mornings I make a big breakfast, but that's me. I love that. I don't do that because I have to. I do that because I want to. But
I would be the same way.
That's how we survive.
Right.
I know.
And it's great. I think
that's
wonderful because, exactly, everybody is looking out for each other, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's great.
Yeah. I do too. And, you know, when we talk about getting the world to a better place, I say this all the time. I say this to my kids. I say this to my friends. How are we supposed to make the world that any better when families can't even take care of each other? And
What?
Lots of them, because it's, you know, have everybody be together.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you've got enough space to do it. I mean, you know, take that. But
right. Right.
So
yeah, I think it's great.
Tell people about being prepared. If health-wise, you're a lot brighter than me in regard to this kind of stuff. You've done enough studies and everything. What about, how can we make sure that the ones that aren't sick right now keep themselves in a better place? I know that we're big on diet, but let's just talk about energy level and not getting weak and doing things like that. Are you got any pointers to give anybody about those kind of things so that if they do need to have some kind of a procedure, maybe we should kind of research and see what kind of procedures would make sense for an elderly person to do. You know, like a cardiogram. They're not horribly expensive. And a cardiogram, if you're losing consciousness or like having, what did they call them, TIAs, you know, those like mini strokes and stuff like that. And a doctor wants you to have a test for that. I would say that makes sense. Wouldn't you?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about anything
else?
Yeah, that
would be good.
What do you think? What if somebody wanted to do something like that to Lindsay? Is there any test that you would flat out say, absolutely not, you're not doing that to him?
Well,
How do you feel about PET scans and shit like that?
No, because of the radiation that's going through the body. Yeah, that's not good.
Mm-hmm.
And even for me, colonoscopy, that's unnecessary. I mean, as long as your bowels are clean and you're going a couple of times a day, there is no problem. Okay, and you don't need that because too many bad things could happen. But, you know,
what do you think bad could happen with
every
a colonoscopy? That's another biggie.
Yeah, I know. Everybody gets them. Not me. Oh, heck no. My brother-in-law just got one 2 weeks ago, and I tried to talk him out of it, and he says, oh, no, my doctor says I need it. I'm past the age. And I'm like, all right, whatever. So what they do is they have their beds all lined up after they knock you out. And they just ream you out. I mean, it's like an assembly line. And there's, to me, there's too many instances where a mistake could happen. You know, and it's, I don't know. I don't think you need it. Now, if you've got an issue, yeah, I guess so. You know, if you're concerned. You know, like you're always constipated, you haven't figured that part out, and you haven't fixed it, you know, then, you know, I guess you ought to see what could be done with that. You know, colonoscopy, I guess they want to see. But I don't know. I do not do
that. Well, most of the people I know have, if they're over the age of 60, they've had a colonoscopy. I had a colonoscopy probably, I don't know, 15, 16 years ago because Dr. Joe, that was our on-staff doctor at Hippocrates, I got the flu, worst case that I ever had in a long time, and I was projectile vomiting, and I've talked before about how many problems I've had in my lifetime with having any kind of regularity. So that's what they said to me. You probably should have a colonoscopy. Dr. Joe said to me, Renee, it's not going to hurt. It'd be a good idea because you're too young to be having these kind of problems, you know. So I went with it, and it was nothing. You go to sleep, you know, and you wake up and feel refreshed. Nothing hurt. Nothing, you know, there was no discomfort whatsoever. And they told me that I had, you know, diverticulitis and diverticulosis and all this kind of crap, and that I couldn't have seeds and I couldn't have this and I couldn't have that. And I said, okay. And that's when I was a vegan, so I wasn't eating any of those kind of things anyway. And I don't know, probably, like I said, at least maybe 16 years ago. And I've never had a problem with that since. And, of course, I also talk about my irregularity, and ever since I started using your product, that doesn't exist for me anymore. As a matter of fact, I've had the same bottle I got from you, I don't know, 6 months ago. It's only got like
maybe
two capfuls out of it because I only need it every now and then. And it makes all the difference in the world. So those kind of things are dangerous, to have that kind of irregularity and stuff like that. And I believe that if you're going to think about some of the things that can make you very unhealthy and very uncomfortable at any given time, that would be one of them. But then I would say to you, you know, get the Swedish bitters, because, you know, I can't rave too much about that because.
Yeah. It's the most important thing.
It's the most what?
The Swedish bitters. I mean, it's more important to keep your bowels clean, to keep your colon clean, than any other product that I make, I think. I'll tell you a story about me.
Yeah.
When I used to be constipated all the time, before I started making the Swedish bitters and my products, I would go to the bathroom. I wasn't constipated. You know, it was free-flowing, okay? It would switch between constipation and diarrhea. And when I'd have the diarrhea, what comes out with it? That toilet was full of blood, full of blood. And I'm like, holy crap, will you look at this? And then I started searching. Yeah, I started searching. And I know I had polyps because along with the blood would come mucus, okay? That's how you know you have polyps, all right? So I'm not about to go do no ream out. So I found the Swedish bitters, started doing that, haven't had a problem since. Have not had that problem since.
Well, that's the way I feel, too. Guess who's on my dashboard? It just came up.
Shelly.
I'm wondering how long she's been there. Hi, Shell.
Hey, guys.
Are you there?
Yeah, I've been here for 25 minutes. I called in a few minutes late.
Are you serious?
I got caught up in something. Yeah, I've been sending you text messages. I've hung up and called back in twice, and I've been hitting the one and hitting the one and not hitting the one and hitting the one. And because I thought maybe you'd notice, you know, like somebody waving their hat. I don't know what you see on your sign, but yeah. So, but I've been listening to the show.
Well, normally
so.
You're, yeah. Well, normally your number it comes right up, you know, but tonight, but this is the kind of weird things that have been going on with all of my, today I came out and went on my touchscreen Chromebook out in the living room to program tonight's program, and I had a whole new thing. None of my apps, everything was gone. So I came in here and got on this computer, and I was able to bring everything back up on this computer. But the boys and I had to work on the other computer for like an hour tonight to get it to go back to my original page. So I don't know whether it's the storms or what it is, but that's why we couldn't do the show Monday night. I couldn't put the program in at all Monday night. So anyway, so we're talking about, so you heard what I talked about, the 60 Minutes thing that Carolyn Fears sent me?
No, I didn't hear about that, but I did want to make, you can give me a quick update, but I did want to make one quick comment because I heard you guys talking about colonoscopies, and I don't want to scare anybody, but I've never had a colonoscopy. I won't have them because I actually know two people that had their intestines punctured during the procedure and didn't make it. They didn't survive. And I met I met their siblings. I don't know if you remember, but one of them was the brother of that woman that worked at the front desk at Hippocrates. Her brother went in for a well check. He was only 40 years old, and they made a mistake and they punctured his intestine. And within 3 days, he had passed away. He ended up having such a bad infection. But that always, and I don't think they're necessary unless you have some sort of symptomology, and then you want to make sure you're having a colonoscopy with somebody who's done a lot of them, not somebody who's just getting started, because it's very risky. If they don't use the instrument right, that's one area that you don't want to have any damage.
Yeah, and a doctor, your doctor is not the one performing it. It's usually an intern, you know. So, no, I don't do them either.
Yeah, there's
no way.
That too.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, but that's the main reason, because inside of 1 year, I met two family members who had lost a loved one because the procedure wasn't done properly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've had a few episodes. Mine was a good one, and I never had any repercussions from it. And again, if you have a problem like that, it is nice to know the name of the game. And I guess of all the things, I mean, blood tests. When people call me and say to me, you know, this is what's going on. Just a phone call recently with somebody who is a cancer survivor, and she called me and she said, I'm bleeding when I go potty. I said, from where? And she says, it's not my vagina. And I said, okay, you probably have hemorrhoids. And she said, but I didn't poop or anything. I'm just bleeding. And I said, are you having pain? No. I said, did you have a bowel movement or something yesterday that could have tore you or given you an abrasion or something like that? No. And I said, and what color is the blood? And she said, just, you know, like red blood. I said, like a period blood? And she said, kind of. And she said, but I know that's where it was coming from, you know, because I examined everything. And I said, okay. But she was panicking. And she has a whole bunch of doctors that she sees all the time. And I said, my guess is that, you know, it was a hemorrhoid. And I would tell you, if you want to know what I would suggest you go and get some aloe and start drinking some aloe. If you've got severe hemorrhoids, that will help, but eventually you may have to have something done about that. So it ends up it was a hemorrhoid, and she's fine now after one burst. It was probably fairly a ways into her colon. And the only time you really can examine a hemorrhoid is when it's protruding, and that doesn't always happen. But you can still get repercussions from it.
Well, generally speaking, if the blood is red, that's not really anything to be concerned about anyway, because that's usually localized and it usually is hemorrhoids. So I'm not saying 100% of the time, but the vast majority of cases, if the blood is red, it's not to be, it's not a concern. It's when it's black or especially black and tarry, that means it's coming from much higher up in the digestive system, and then it can be symptomatic of something much more serious.
Right. Well, that's why I asked her what color it was. And and that's what I believe and know to be true as well. And on that note, I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but when somebody rigorously detoxes with a program like the vegan program and the wheatgrass and the green drink and everything, it's not unusual for an elderly woman to start her cycle up again to get rid of old eggs. I think I've mentioned that on the show before as well. I mean, I witnessed that several different times. So, but again, being advised of what's going on. But the reason we're talking about this tonight, Shell, is $50 billion is spent a year by Medicare for unneeded tests and things like that in the hospital for our senior citizens.
Oh, I believe it.
And it blew me away. It blew me away. It was Carolyn sent it to me, and then I watched the 60 Minutes program about it. And many of them were simply not even necessary. It was just because the Medicare is available.
Right. Well, I'm positive that's what happened to my mom in the hospital, because we kept arguing with the doctors. My mom went in for one thing, and they started doing all these other tests and procedures, and I kept asking her, what does that have to do with what she came in with? And half the time, they couldn't even answer me. And she had like six different doctors, and I said, do you guys talk to each other? She's in the hospital. She had a different doctor for every little thing, so it's not one doctor that's looking at her overall health, which is another thing that I'm very critical about with Western medicine, because Eastern medicine is not like that. You have a doctor that looks at, that's why it's called holistic medicine, you have a doctor that looks at your whole health. Here we have specialists that don't talk to each other, and sometimes they do things that interfere with each other. And I'd come
that's
in
right.
the next day, and I found out that they did a procedure or something like that, and my mom was so nervous all the time, and I actually got upset with the doctor. I said, you know, I feel like I can't leave the hospital, because the minute I leave, you guys do something. I said, and it was, I think, the fourth or fifth day, I told them they were not allowed doing any procedures anymore unless somebody called and got my permission. I said, don't ask my mom if it's okay with her, because she's not cognizant enough to be able to say yes or no. I said, it's like you're talking to a five-year-old child. And they did. They started calling me. But even after that, I'd come in, and sometimes they still would have done something. I mean, I felt like I was losing my mind there during that time.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about before,
scary.
A patient advocate. And that has to be a legal thing, probably.
Well, I think some of your hospitals now are putting an advocate for patients. And I know at Jackson Memorial or the Ryder Trauma Center where Mikey was, there was a lady by the name of Lorraine. And because Mikey had so much stuff going on and he was in the trauma center for so long, she was there every day to make sure that everything was being done. And, of course, but he was also all over the news. So they were taking extra good care of him. So I can't say that it was about them, you know, they were covering their ass is what they were doing. But at least they were doing it. So we were grateful for that. And I think that that should be enacted everywhere. I think they're trying to, but you have to have a special person to do that job, you know, because that's a very sensitive job. And I don't think everybody's prepared to be that person, that ombudsman that can honestly go between a patient and a hospital that pays them. There's not too many people that are capable of doing that job and doing it really really to help the patient,
well,
I'm sorry to say.
Well, the other part of the billing, though, is that, like, I mean, you don't even have to be elderly. They take advantage of anybody. I'll give a perfect example. When Nina and I had lived at Minor Road, now this is before she started working at Disney, and she didn't have any medical insurance. And we had just moved in there, and within the first week, she ended up, I had to call an ambulance at like 2 o'clock in the morning because she was in tremendous pain. She's throwing up. She's all sweaty and gray and everything. It turned out that that's when we found out she had a kidney stone. It was a 7-millimeter kidney stone. It was stuck in the urethra tube, which is extraordinarily painful.
Very painful.
But they didn't do anything for her. She got to the hospital. They hydrated her, a bunch of stuff. The doctor came in, asked her 3 questions, found out she didn't have any medical insurance, and said, well, we're not really going to be able to do anything for you. Normally they would have taken her in and tried to remove it. He wouldn't even touch my sister. He was in there, asked her a question, walked out of the room, didn't do anything for her, and a different, like a nurse came in or something, and within a few hours she was out of there. They gave her a couple of painkillers just to get her through the night and told her to hydrate and to go and see not a urologist, it's a different type of a urine specialist. She ends up getting a bill from this doctor for like thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, because she didn't have any insurance, and she called the office and she says, he came in and asked me a question, walked out. He didn't do anything. And there were 3 procedures on his bill. And she said, you guys didn't do anything because I didn't have any insurance. How can you? And to this day, they're still trying to get that. And Nina's actually thinking of getting, going to one of these credit agencies to try to clear these things, because he's billing her for things he didn't do. He walked in and walked out. Didn't do anything. She got no treatment that night, except for a prescription for pain.
Yeah. Well, I think all 3 of us have had a taste of that. I just talked about when Spike sliced his finger on the table saw here a few weeks ago. We got a bill just recently for over $6,000, and they did nothing for him except sew it up. Yeah, $6,000. We were in the emergency place where they x-rayed it, stitched it up, a very terrible job at stitching. Then sent us to St. Mary's via ambulance, wouldn't let me drive him. And then we get this huge bill, and we both laughed about it, you know, and he says, they can send me as many bills as they want to, you know. And I said, that's pretty sad. But then I read this $50 billion for unnecessary treatment, and that's what got me so annoyed and so frustrated.
Yeah.
There's people I know, dozens of people that are doing okay. I mean, they have a roof over their heads, they're paying their bills, but they can't afford insurance. And if they don't have a job that offers insurance, and now, unless you have children that are still in your care or under the age of, I don't know, some people tell me 21, some people tell me 25, I guess different policies have different rules and regulations.
I think whether or not you're a
student. If you're what? A student?
I think the age depends on whether or not they're an active student. Like if they're in college or not.
That's what I thought. But Valerie covers Mikey, who will be 25 this October. And he's covered on her insurance until he turns 25, and he's not a student. So I don't know. I thought that was the deal. And but that's not what they did with him. So I don't know. I think it all depends on who you're dealing with most of the time. But what upset me was how can it? It has to be one or the other. And I don't want to take away from somebody who's lucky enough to get it, but on the same token, if it's good for one, it's supposed to be good for all. But I even mentioned on the show, if you are a single parent and you are not working, you're staying home and taking care of 3 children, and you've applied for some kind of Medicaid and or social service help, the criteria for that now is so ridiculous that you may lose your policy unless you have a part-time job. So the kids can stay on the policy, but you don't get anything. So,
and then I see this $50 billion thing, and I'm like, what the hell? I mean, where's the balance in that? And Monica and I talked about what we would tell somebody who's a senior citizen, Jane comes to me about all the tests they make her do, and every time I turn around, they're giving her a new test, but she's got great insurance, and she's okay with it. And only one time was it an inpatient thing, and that was for a colonoscopy, and they kept her there for 3 days. It was horrible for her. I'm not going to go into detail, but it was horrific for her. And that was since she'd had the stroke, in 2015. But because they knew it'd be paid for, because she's a senior citizen. They refer to us as, do you guys know what an octogenarian is?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No.
What is it?
What? It's anybody
between the ages of 80 and 89.
Yeah.
Wow. I did not know that.
The definition of an octogenarian. I didn't either. I had to look it up. I'm like, what the hell's an octogenarian? I've heard that word all my life and had no idea what it was.
90 to 100 is a centenarian. Centenarian.
Oh. Oh, my God. I don't want to be one of them. But now, I go see somebody like Bob Clement, who's still dancing with his second wife after being married for 50-some years, and now he's remarried and happier than hell and out there dancing, looking like a Dapper Dan, and I think to myself, it's all worth it. But, again, he's always been in relatively good health. He did have a heart thing a couple years ago, but it was nothing. Everything got fine very quickly. But what about the ones that don't? I mean, how many times is a loved one put in the hospital, like what happened to your mom, honey? What happened to your mom shouldn't have happened. None of that stuff should have happened.
No, it shouldn't have. No. And it still bothers me to this day. Every now and then I still run through that whole scenario, despite the fact that there was a part of her that wanted to go, the bottom line is that she suffered a lot, especially the last 2 weeks. She really suffered, and sometimes that still waves over me, and it bothers me.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I'm sure that it does. Well, and that's what made me want to talk about this today, because if you'd have asked me this question 20 years ago, the answer would probably be different. I mean, we all grow and learn, and different things, give us different reactions and change our minds about a lot of things. I do not want to be laying in a bed with my kids taking care of me. I do not. I do not.
Right.
I will take a long swim with heavy shorts on or something. I'm not. I don't want that. And I definitely don't want to be laying in a hospital bed with nobody who even loves me and has to put up with me. So for me, if you're that sick and you've got all those problems, just leave me alone. Let me be comfortable. And when I can't do everything for myself again, it'll be up to me. But I don't want that. And I think that changes the older you get and the more you see. I might not have said that, when I was 30, but that's definitely how I feel now.
I also think there are more and more people that are understanding that illness and infirmity is not a natural part of aging. It's a part of living a life out of balance, either nutritionally or because of our thoughts or a little of both, or maybe being near contaminants, maybe working in a job that where you're always exposed to different chemicals or fumes or whatever. And the more and more we learn about that, the more and more people can do things to protect themselves, either if they're going to work at a job that's hazardous, to wear protective clothing or to do detoxes periodically to keep themselves healthy. So it breaks my heart when I see people that are resigned to having an old age that's filled with suffering, because it doesn't have to be that way. It didn't used to be that way. You know, you look at cultures that lived healthier lifestyles where they ate better, thought better, were more active. There's still civilizations on this planet today that people will work into their 90s and 100s, and they don't have cancers, and they don't have diabetes, and they eat simple. You know, not some of them are vegetarian societies, some of them aren't. You know, so you know, but even if they're not a vegetarian society, they eat good food. They eat everything is natural, everything is clean. They're not eating preservatives. They're not eating you know, packaged products for convenience sake. They're getting nutrition out of the food that they do eat. You know, you look at a lot of the Mediterranean cultures and even some of the other cultures like near India and China, like the Latakes, which is still an active society today. And these people will live into their hundreds and they're still working in the field. And when they die, they mm-hmm. literally lie down and fall asleep. So, you know, suffering,
yeah.
infirmity, loss of memory, things like that, that is not a natural part of aging. That's a natural part of our bodies deteriorating because we live out of balance, because unfortunately in the United States, and we're not the only government that does it, we're not taught how to live healthfully. We're taught how to live in a way that keeps the medical establishment in business, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think the three of us agree on that wholeheartedly. I think the big thing, though, is to be aware and to understand and to be prepared. And we talked about that a little bit tonight, too, about the living will, the DNR, all the different things that are out there. You must have that stuff in order if you are over a certain age or if you are already struggling with some kind of a problem or an illness or something. I suggest that you take care of those things so that your needs are met and the people that love you can do the things that you want to have done. I think it's more important now than ever, especially after reading this article, because just because you're old and the money is there, I mean, that's so out of balance for me, I can't even really articulate how sick to my stomach it makes me to know that that's being done just because it can be. And there's people going without everywhere, people dying, even children dying, because there's no way for them to go to a hospital that wants to take care of them without money. I mean, is that American? I mean, is that even any part American? It isn't to me. So we're about out of time, and I think that it is an important thing, and I hope that if you have any questions, you can always call any of us. You can call the show and talk to us and let us know if you're worried about something like that, and any one of us can probably talk you through that. You can get these kind of papers, living wills, DNRs, all that kind of stuff, a lot of times online for free. So research that if you are a computer person. Matter of fact, right now on Facebook, there's a company that's offering that for people. If they want to send for the paperwork, they'll send it to you for free, some of those forms. So, but I also know that you can get that kind of stuff at Office Depot. And what's the name of the other office store? Not
Staples.
Office Depot and Staples, yes. They have that kind of paperwork, and you can get the forms and fill them out and have them notarized. And make sure that you give all that important information to someone that you know you can trust, put it someplace safe so those people know where it is, et cetera. All those things are a part of following through on what you're trying to do for yourself. So God bless everybody. We'll be back on Friday. And I'm really excited because Sean really wants to talk on the show. Sean, probably not Jody. Jody's not very gregarious like Sean is. But he just called me the other day and said, when can I be on the show? And I asked him to come on tonight so we could meet Monica at the same time. But today was his birthday. So happy birthday, Sean.
Aww.
All the kids took
happy
him out
birthday,
for
Sean.
Dinner. So, yeah. So we'll be back Friday, everybody. God bless. Stay well, and try to take care of yourselves. Thanks, girls. I love you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night, ladies. God bless everyone.